Have this family children's event happening and going to happen, and I'm kind of happy, delighted it's happening, and Jim organized it. It was really wonderful, and Jim kind of asked me to just give a talk that seemed appropriate for the occasion, so I've been wondering what in the world I could say, and he helped me out a little bit by asking if I would say something about the Brahmaviharas, since the four games are going to be on these four divine abodes of Buddhism. And so I'm not sure what I'm going to say, so I'm kind of waiting to hear myself here on this topic. But the I have been thinking about a few things I wanted to share as part of this. I think it works. One was last night I had trouble falling asleep. I was awake for a long time, just laying there in bed. And for a while it was kind of uncomfortable. And I realized it was uncomfortable because I was concerned about tomorrow. And about, if I don't get enough sleep, then how am I going to perform? How am I going to, get along well? But if I didn't get caught up in my thoughts about tomorrow, I was actually quite content laying there, quite happy in and of itself. So the question is, where do I live? Do I live in those thoughts about tomorrow, or do I live where I was, just laying there in bed? And so I started doing a loving-kindness meditation for myself, just laying there. And very quickly I became very happy laying there. And at some point I fell asleep. I'm not sure when. But it was quite a nice time to be doing loving-kindness meditation. And yesterday when we did the memorial service for Marty, I was struck even more than I had knowing him, what a kind person he was. And for his own personal difficulties, in spite of them, he was a man who touched a lot of people with compassion and kindness and in a lot of small ways, and made a big difference for us as a community in all the small ways that he helped create our community. He was one of the people in his way who created us, kind of matured us as a community of people who knew each other and connected to each other and are friends with each other, take care of each other. So I've been thinking about one of the people who has become my heroes in recent times. America has a lot of heroes, I suppose, and most heroes in America are not religious figures, spiritual figures. Martin Luther King, I guess, was a great hero, and he was a minister. And maybe there are some others like him. But I think the heroes of our culture tend to be sports characters and Madonna and people like that, I guess, of sorts. And one of my heroes now is Mr. Rogers. And Mr. Rogers is a very kind man. He's a kind of embodiment of loving kindness. And it's kind of significant to talk about Mr. Rogers today, because Friday morning they played the last new Mr. Rogers program. So from now on, it's only going to be reruns. So I got up. I didn't get up and sit Friday morning. I got up and watched Mr. Rogers. wanted to watch the last Mr. Rogers. And I was really struck by, it's such a simple program in so many ways, and he actually says very little in the course of the program, but what he says is often very significant and full of wisdom and kindness. And he talked about how people. He said, one of the first messages of the program was, everybody's different, everybody's unique, and isn't that wonderful? And then he sings his song, "Won't You Be My Neighbor?" And he kind of talks right to the kid, each of us, I guess. And he just looks at you and says, "Won't you be my neighbor? I love you, and I'm proud of you," and all these wonderful things. And all these kids in America just love Mr. Rogers. They sit there, and he's kind of like their hero, I suppose. And it's like he's in your living room with you. So Mr. Rogers came to Woodside. You know that story, Mr. Rogers coming to Woodside? He came to see Coco. who is our resident gorilla at the Gorilla Foundation in Woodside. And when Coco saw Mr. Rogers, he gave Mr. Rogers a big hug, because Coco watches Mr. Rogers every day. And Coco loves Mr. Rogers. And then proceeded to take off his shoes, because Mr. Rogers takes off his shoes every day. Because Mr. Rogers, every time he does something right, he does it again and again and again. So it's something right about Mr. Rogers coming into his little studio, his little living room, and taking off his shoes and putting on his loafers and taking off his jacket and putting on his sweater, which originally his mother apparently made for him. And that's the right thing to do. So like a Zen master who does the same ritual every day, he does the same ritual for these kids every day, every day, every day. And I suppose it pulls the kids into this familiar world of Mr. Rogers. I learned that Mr. Rogers doesn't like to edit his program very much. And I don't quite understand how television editing works, but he doesn't want to have more than two edits per television minute. Maybe it means cutting in, or you cut in and overlap it with another piece or something. And the reason he doesn't want his program to be fragmented, because he feels there's so much fragmentation in our society, and that he doesn't think it's very healthy for people. Turns out that Mr. Rogers first watched television when he came home from college. Mr. Rogers is in his 70s, so he was in college, I guess, when television began. And he came home to his parents' house, and they'd had a television. And the first thing he saw on television was people throwing pies in each other's faces. And he was horrified by this. And he vowed that he would devote himself to transforming television to become a force of grace in society. And he was ordained as a maybe Presbyterian minister. And one thing I heard in the Chronicle is that one of the things the Presbyterian church did was assign him to children's ministry. And he started his television programs. And he tried through television to try to change our society as a force of grace and stop the fragmentation and all the things that goes on. And he's worked tirelessly for that for his whole life. Some people would say with very little success, and some people would say with astounding success if the world is saved through small steps and small pieces. There's all these great stories about Mr. Rogers' effect on people's lives, like Coco's life, There's a story of, as it was told, of a boy who had cerebral palsy, and he wasn't able to take care of himself very well. And I heard this story, read about the story. The way it was told was as if Mr. Rogers had told it, because it's kind of Mr. Rogers' language. But because this boy couldn't take care of himself very well, people had done really bad things to this boy. And really things that made the boy feel really dirty about himself, and that he was really bad. And he grew up hating himself, and often hitting himself and doing terrible things to himself, really a social misfit, and real challenge for the people who knew him and his parents. But the one thing he really loved was Mr. Rogers. He watched it every day. So somehow or other, they arranged for Mr. Rogers to come and see this boy. I think he ran away when he saw Mr. Rogers first. But somehow they managed to kind of stay in the room together. And Mr. Rogers came up to the boy and said, "I'd like to ask you a favor, if you would do something for me." And he was just blown away that Mr. Rogers, it's like God, would ask him to do something for him, for Mr. Rogers. And so he kind of stopped to listen. And Mr. Rogers said, "Will you pray for me?" And the boy was just blown away that Mr. Rogers would ask him to pray for him. Because Mr. Rogers was not God, he was next to God. And if someone next to God was wanting, he must have something inside of him special that he who is next to God wants him to pray for him. And so suddenly it was kind of, the way it was kind of like a spark of goodness or spark of self-respect or appreciation or something that occurred in that boy when Mr. Rogers asked him if the boy would pray for him. And apparently he didn't continue to pray for him every day for Mr. Rogers. And then the person who was told the story, the person who narrated it in the writing that I wrote, asked Mr. Rogers something like, or told him, that was really brilliant thing that you thought about, that you asked him to pray for you. You really did the boy a good deed. And Mr. Rogers looked a little bit horrified and said, no, I didn't do it for him. I did it for myself. I figure that someone who has so much suffering, they're really close to God. And if someone's close to God, I like them to pray for me. And maybe that's why it worked, was that he wasn't doing it as a skillful means to help the kid. He was just meeting the kid as someone he thought could help himself. There's a story of a man who was blind and had a very difficult life. And then as an adult, he felt that he hadn't lived his childhood. And so he was going to relive his childhood. And so he adopted the name Bubble Joy, or Joy Bubble. And he went to some place in Pittsburgh, or Pennsylvania, where they have archived all of Mr. Rogers' episodes. And it's somewhere between 900 and... It said, on Friday morning, it said 1,765. So I guess it's 1,700 episodes of Mr. Rogers, if that's what the number meant. Anyway, so he went there to look at all the episodes, and he gave himself something like, you know, all summer, 10 hours a day, to watch all the episodes of Mr. Rogers and, you know, have a childhood. And he couldn't see, so all he had to do was listen and imagine Mr. Rogers, what goes on. I didn't quite understand the story, how it happened. But at some point he had a visitation. Mr. Rogers came to see him at the end, or he had a hallucination. I don't know, after 10 hours a day of 3 months of... it just said they had a visitation of Mr. Rogers. And Mr. Rogers offered to teach him how to pray. And the guy said, Bubble Joy said, I can't remember any prayers, if you teach me anything. And Mr. Rogers said, this prayer I have only has 3 words. Can you remember 3 words? And the guy said, yes. And the prayer that Mr. Rogers taught him was, thank you, God. And that was a great prayer. Just thank you is good enough for the Buddhists. Thank you, God. And that's a great way to pray. It's a great way to do loving kindness. It's a great way of practicing the Brahma Viharas. So Mr. Rogers had a lifetime campaign to transform television. And he won a number of Emmys for his work. And a few years ago, he won the Lifetime Achievement Award at the Emmys. So he had to go there to receive the award and go up on the podium and say something, I suppose, that you do when you win such an award. And he got up and he said, in Mr. Rogers' way, everyone has someone special in their life who helped make them who they are. Let's stop and be silent for 10 seconds and remember those people. Now, you don't ask people in television to stop for 10 seconds. 10 seconds of silence in television just is not done, right? But Mr. Rogers is an authority figure. You know, so you don't say no to Mr. Rogers when he's up there. So apparently there was some giggling and awkwardness in the audience, but he said, I'm going to keep time. And the story is told that by the end of the 10 seconds, there were people crying. All these movie stars with all the makeup and stuff. So Mr. Rogers stopped the world, or stopped television for 10 seconds. It's quite remarkable, I think. Can you do it? So Mr. Rogers, he's my hero because I think of him as the kind of embodiment of kindness and care. Oh, one more story, Mr. Rogers' story. Or two more Mr. Rogers stories, and then I'll stop Mr. Rogers. I hope you've seen him. I had never seen him until my son, you know, started kind of being of age to watch some television. It's the only thing we watch him, let him watch, Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street, a couple times a week. And I never heard of him before this, so I kind of was too... I was growing up, I was a teenager, I think, before he appeared on television. Mr. Rogers weighs 143 pounds, and he's weighed 143 pounds for the entire 33 years that he's done Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Because if you do something, if something is right, you do the same thing each time. You don't change. And so he swims every day, and he does. He's a vegetarian, and doesn't smoke, and doesn't drink, and you know, lives a saintly life. And weighs himself every day. It's always 143 pounds. And he likes 143 pounds because the words "I love you," "I" has one letter, "love" has four letters, and "you" has three letters. So his weight is "I love you." That's Mr. Rogers. And Mr. Rogers, when he was a young man, decided that he wanted to live in heaven. It wasn't that he wanted to go to heaven, be reborn in heaven. He wanted to live in heaven. And Mr. Rogers' idea of heaven is was the connections we have with each other. And so he devoted his life to having these wonderful, heartfelt connections with people. And apparently, he stops for people. And when he encounters someone, he just stops and is really there for them and really looks at them and penetrates them and offers his little words of love or kindness or respect or, you know, makes you feel special. And so an American saint who just stopped his program, or just the program continues. So loving kindness is a practice of Buddhism. And what I love about one of the little scholarly discoveries in history of, in studies of Buddhism, is that loving kindness, the four Brahmaviharas, which are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, are four. The Brahmaviharas are the four virtues of how we can relate to other people. We can relate to people with love, loving kindness, with compassion, with sympathetic joy, and with equanimity, kind of a wise, loving equanimity. And these are very important in Buddhism. And the scholarly contribution for us is the scholars don't believe that these four originated in Buddhism, but rather they originated, they were part of the religious and spiritual milieu of Buddhism in the time of the Buddha, of India at the time of the Buddha. They were just kind of part of the spiritual traditions. And a lot of the things we think of nowadays as Buddhism, the Buddha adopted from the common good sense of the spiritual traditions of his time. And most of those traditions have died away, disappeared, and what survives is, you know, it's, some of these things only survive in Buddhism. And the Brahmaviharas is one of these things. And I'm fond of this because then we can kind of be liberated from the idea that the Brahmaviharas are Buddhist, that they belong to any particular religion. I like to think of them as being universal, they're just human, the human qualities, human capacities that we all have. And we can appreciate them and play with them and enjoy them, and cultivate them and develop them. And one of the things that I've learned from my contact with Buddhist practice is that the Brahmaviharas are something we can cultivate. We don't have to leave it to accident that we are kind and loving people. We can actually cultivate our capacity for kindness, for compassion, by cultivating our intention to express those, our intention for them. It's very hard to feel loving or feel compassionate as a feeling, but it's a lot easier to find within us maybe a very small rudimentary wish, intention, for the well-being of oneself and the well-being of others, and to recognize that wish, to recognize that desire, that intention, that motivation, and then to give expression to it, to speak it, to act on it, is a way of cultivating and developing our loving kindness, our compassion, our joy in others. So to actually take on the practice or the activities that gives expression to it is considered very significant and very important in Buddhist spirituality. So we have a practice called loving kindness meditation, where we actually spend some time finding that intention for our own well-being And then giving phrases to it, words to it. May I be happy. May I be filled with joy. May I be safe. May I be healthy. May I be peaceful. All kinds of words you might choose. And you say and repeat those things, not to make yourself feel this way, because it's difficult to make you feel loving. Sometimes you feel the opposite when you do this practice. But you do it in order to kind of develop those seeds, to strengthen those seeds. If you water the seeds of goodness within you, those seeds will develop and flower in maybe unexpected ways. If you water the seeds of badness, you know, of unwholesome states within you, those develop. Very simply, the habits that we develop, become who we are. And if I love this expression, with enough drops, the bathtub is filled with water. With enough little drops of unkindness, our bathtub of our heart gets filled with, becomes unkind. With little drops, little kind of, maybe seemingly insignificant movements of kindness, our heart gets filled with kindness. We predispose ourselves to become kind people and generous people. So we practice. We can take on the practice of being kind. We can find value in it. And we can find value and preciousness in our connections to other people. And that we can make a difference in other people's lives. And that other people can make a difference in our lives. Mr. Rogers, when he saw the boy who had cerebral palsy, was asking to be helped by the boy that other people had arranged for Mr. Rogers to go help. When Mr. Rogers encounters people on the streets, it's like a little riot, apparently. There's all these children in the world, these people who grew up with Mr. Rogers, and they kind of run over to him. And Mr. Rogers apparently stops and loves it when people come to him and he spends time with them. Because Mr. Rogers thinks that when all these people come and love him because of who he is, he's receiving grace. The grace for him, for the grace of God. And he just soaks it up because he feels he's receiving all this grace. Mr. Rogers, you know, it's his connection to other people is not just because he wants to help other people and make a difference in the world, but he's helped by his connection to other people. So to allow ourselves to be in contact and connection to other people, not just to make a difference to the world, but to make a difference to ourselves, to be open or sensitive and aware enough to make a difference for who we are, and to water those seeds of kindness within us, to allow other people to be kind towards us, and to be present enough for that to happen. One of the ways to use your daily meditation practice as a way of making a difference in your life and the life of others is to take very seriously how you feel at the end of your meditation. Take very seriously whatever, even if it's just a very rudimentary level of calm or self-honesty or vulnerability or self-understanding or tenderness or humility or humbleness that sometimes happens, because it's very humbling to sit and try to meditate sometimes, isn't it? And to really appreciate that, and to try to somehow nourish those seeds or nourish those, and see if you can go out into the world and meet the world a little bit from that place, and not kind of rush into your life and then just suddenly kind of be overwhelmed and let those little seeds that happen there in the sitting dry up because they're not being nourished. So I'm very grateful that Jim has organized this event. I'm very grateful for many people here in our community who have slowly over the years created a network of friendships and warmth and neighborliness. Won't you be my neighbor? Mr. Rogers' theme song. Marty, when one of his contributions to our Sangha was he created what is called Sangha Neighbors, which is a group of people, kind of informal and sometimes less organized, more organized than at other times, of people in our community who are available to help each other if someone needs to go to the doctor or needs to, is sick and needs some shopping to be done. And so I'm very grateful to all of you that have helped create a sense of community and network and friendships And it's really remarkable to me how much we've matured in the last few years, as not just as meditators who sit in quiet and able to get quietly concentrated and settled in their own mind, but more importantly, people who know how to reach out to each other and are connected and warm and friendly. Because I think the spiritual life for all of us, for a community, for a wider community, not just our immediate community, flows out through the connections we have with each other. If the spiritual life is only intrapersonal, only inside of yourself or your own well-being, I think that sooner or later it either atrophies or dead ends or doesn't really develop to its full capacity. And to find some way to let what happens to you in your spiritual life flow into your connection with other people, I think is essential, is really important. So, and I'm very grateful that it's, to the great degree that it's happening here in our community, and people like Marty and many people here, but now today Jim is with his offering to us. And it'd be very nice if many of you stayed, and just for no other reason, just to kind of talk to each other and be part of the games or whatever. And well, that's all I have to say. Do you guys have anything you want to say or questions? Yes?
Could you briefly just go over the equanimity practice?
Oh, equanimity practice is the one I least understand. I don't really quite understand it, actually. It's kind of... Maybe you guys think it's very strange for me to say that, you know. But what I understand equanimity practice, which is maybe quite inadequate understanding, is that it's a balance of mind, a kind of balance of heart, in the face of other people, in the relationship to other people, where we don't get pulled in some kind of neurotic way into their suffering or their happiness, or we don't resist it and pull away. That we stay open and very present, but the mind neither sinks nor gets agitated, neither get depressed or agitated or anxious, but the mind stays kind of balanced and even in relationship to other people. Not in an aloof and indifferent way, but actually maybe in a loving way, perhaps. The analogy that's sometimes used for the Brahmaviharas, maybe some of you remember this analogy better than I can say it, maybe you can correct me, but loving kindness, you know, is feeling of tender, loving, parental feeling a mother might have for her young child when the young child is just playing happily. And compassion is what a parent might feel when the child is in some kind of trouble, distress, sick or something. And sympathetic joy perhaps is the feeling of when you might have when a child's grown up and is succeeding in life just fine, has a nice job, or has graduated from college, or is getting married or something, and you feel a lot of joy in your child's joy. And equanimity is maybe when you see your child has grown up and is a parent themselves, and you see the ups and downs and struggles they go through as a parent, but you've been through it yourself, and you kind of know that this is part of parenting, and you have kind of equanimity about it. You're not getting caught up and concerned about it, or you're not going to be their savior automatically, and you're not going to be horrified and distressed about it. You see it as part of life and what they have to go through, and you kind of equanimity about it, or something like that. I don't know. One of the ways you're supposed to practice equanimity is use the phrases that are very, very roughly something like whatever happens to an individual is a result of their own karma. People are receive the results of their own karma. And the idea being that whatever is occurring to someone, whether it's something difficult or something wonderful, that's the kind of that's the result of their own decisions and intentions, motivations that they've set in motion sometime in the past. And so you don't have to feel responsible for their suffering. You might respond in some helpful way, but you don't have to feel responsible for how they are. And I know for me that's an important thing, because sometimes I want to take responsibility for other people's suffering, and And so equanimity is maybe frees us from that sense of responsibility. So that's very inadequate, but that was my... Someone might have a more adequate way of talking about explaining it. Yes? Yeah.
In essence, it's a
truth. Right. So the word for action there would be karma. Often karma is translated as action. Mm-hmm. And this is a very challenging and very important teaching of Buddhism, is that your own happiness really depends on your own choices, your own action, your own what you do. And no one can really... People can support you and nourish and create the conditions that help you change, but no one can be responsible for the choices you make. And if your happiness has to do with your choices, then people are responsible for their own choices. And
I'd like to go back to the idea is an important opportunity.
Beautiful, thank you.
It arises. I wonder if Donna arises at some conjunction of some of the Brahma Viharas.
It's possible. I haven't thought about that exactly. It makes a lot of sense to me that dana or generosity would rise out of the Brahma Viharas. But I would look at a deeper root, that the root for loving kindness is a certain open sensitivity of the heart. When I was first introduced to loving kindness meditation by my Vipassana teachers, I'd come from partly because I came from a Zen background, and for other reasons, I thought it was ridiculous. I thought it was, it felt very artificial to me that you would kind of try to generate loving kindness and love and do this practice to kind of call forth love. And so I just tuned my teachers out and just didn't pay attention to that part of the tradition. And until at some point, the mindfulness meditation that I was doing somehow dropped so much of my defenses, my guards, my preoccupations and all that. And I felt very open, my heart was kind of completely exposed in a sense. And then loving kindness seemed to just kind of bubble up naturally by itself. A lot of loving kindness, a lot of love, compassion, all this stuff. I was really blown away by the strength of it and the degree of it. And then when the teachers would come and do the loving kindness practice, then I had something to connect it to, and it made a lot of sense to me. So I think of kind of one of the roots of loving kindness practice, the Brahma Viharas, is arises out of mindfulness when all the things that get in the way of our heart has dropped away, and the heart is just open. And I think an open heart also finds its expression in generosity. Yes.
I just got to the way of elephants, but it's always been a little embarrassed. I haven't even said, oh, yes. And he said to me, and to you, and I said, I'm also eating cocoa. So I've got this rush of an identity with cocoa to join. Every time I eat chocolate, I
oh, that's beautiful. So it looks like the sun is beginning to come out. So I'll tell you a last Mr. Rogers story. One of the last things Mr. Rogers said on his last program on Friday, he said, you become a grown-up on the inside when you do things that are helpful to yourself and others. I like it that he included yourself. So, thank you, and have a wonderful week.